Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And how's that for a little intro? All right, we're still working it out. I don't know what sounds I exactly want to use, but if anyone's been following the last few episodes, we did get a soundboard and we tested out live every single episode, which is always fun to do. And this is going to be a fun episode as we're going to be doing a full card recap of UFC Vegas 97, talking about what is next for the fighters. A lot of exciting stuff. As well, we're going to be recapping all the action currently that's taking place in week one of the NFL season for the 24-25 NFL season. That is, of course, the 49ers and Jets play tonight as I'm recording this. Hopefully I can finish recording this in time to watch the game. I doubt that's going to come to fruition. But yeah, we're also going to be looking at some things in pop culture, some new UFC news. We got a lot of fun stuff coming at you for today's episode. It's just been beautiful lately here in Minnesota. I don't know how anyone else has felt, but the weather has been absolutely amazing. School's been going great. I was able to see the girlfriend over this past weekend. She's got a pretty nice pad down in the city, or up in the cities, actually. And just, yeah, life has been very splendid. Got marketing club this week. We're grinding out everything that comes at us. You already know that's how we do it, so without a doubt, let's get right into it, because I actually have some opinions on some UFC-related things. So first off, ladies and gentlemen, we will touch on some new UFC fights that have been announced. Just kind of want to get these out of the way, some interesting ones in case anyone has been curious. First off, Bruno Silva back in action in the middleweight matchup here, going down at UFC 308, October 26th. He takes on Ishmael, the Austrian wonder boy, Nargeev. He will be making his UFC... Actually, Ishmael Nargeev is 2-2 in the UFC. I have no idea who this man is. He's from Austria. Bruno Silva, of course. He's been fighting just about everyone that comes his way. Recently beat Brad Tavares. Now, mind you, he's also been beaten by likes of Brendan Allen, Shahram Magomedov. He's very talented, but I do not know who Ishmael Nargeev is. He is 28 years old from Austria? No idea. That fight will be going down the UFC 308 prelims. I kid you not, UFC 308 is looking to be the most loaded card. I always love when they go to Abu Dhabi because they load these cards up ridiculously. So that's exciting. Fight rebooked here. Overeem St. Preux versus Ryan Spann was supposed to take place this past Saturday. Unfortunately, for some reason, it got postponed. It's going down October 5th at UFC 307 on the prelims. Fun matchup coming at you for Paris, of course, going to Paris, France, September 28th. Morgan Cherie, who's 19-10, 1-1 in the UFC, biggest win probably over William Gomez, is taking on Gabriel Miranda. Gabriel Miranda, 1-1 in the UFC, 17-6 professionally. His only freaking notable fight for Gabriel Miranda was his loss to Benoit Saint-Denis 2 years ago in Paris. He'll be stepping in to replace AJ Cunningham, who's supposed to take on Morgan Cherie. Interesting matchup there. I don't really know how to feel about that. Another one coming at you for UFC 307. Of course, going down in Salt Lake City, Utah. If no one knew that. Tim the Dirty Bird Means. Tim, 40 years old now, returning. 33-16 professional record. Wins over Diego Lima, Thiago Alves, Mike Perry. Dude has been fighting a long time in the welterweight division. Takes on another veteran who is 39 years old, Court McGee. Court is 21-13. Actually holds win over Robert Whittaker. Fun fact, back when Robert Whittaker was fighting at welterweight. And one last fight for you. UFC Vegas 100 going down, of course, at the Apex November 9th, the final Apex card for the foreseeable future. Bernardo the Lion King Sopage, who, of course, was in a fight of the night against, who knocked him out with a knee? It wasn't Carlos Prates, was it? It was someone from Carlos Prates' camp. It might have been Carlos Prates. I can't really recall, but Bernardo Sopage had an absolutely amazing fight earlier this year before he was knocked out with a knee. Actually, live here on the podcast, we're going to figure this one out because this is really troubling me. I noticed someone from the notable Fighting Nerds camp, Fighting Nerds, taking over so far in the UFC. They have been very, very dominant. Of course, Kyle Barallo leading their charge. But I know for a fact that Bernardo Sopage fought someone in the UFC. Here we go, guys. Finally found him. He lost to Vinicius Oliveira. That's who it was. I actually don't know if he's from the Fighters, but Vinicius hit him with a nasty knee knockout this year. It was one of the better knockouts we've seen so far this year. But yeah, he's back in action. He takes on Ricky Tercios, the winner, oddly, of The Ultimate Fighter. I have no idea. Ricky Tursos is very terrible. Most recently got submitted by Royal Rosas Jr. But, yeah, I think that Bernardo should run through Ricky if it is the exact same Ricky and the exact same Bernardo that we got in their last fight. So, interesting stuff there. Not too many big fights, you know. I'll be honest, not too many big ones have been actually made official. There's rumors right now that Petr Yan and Deiveson Figueiredo, there's a fight in the works for November, December. I hope that comes true. You could even have that be the main event of Macau, China. That could be super fun. Also, actually, something notable. Demetrius Johnson retired. That is right. The GOAT, Demetrius Johnson, retired from MMA. Absolutely legendary career. The most title defenses in UFC history. I don't know if it's consecutively or just overall. Ran the flyweight division here. Legend. Good stuff. Absolutely amazing stuff. Happy for him. Happy that he gets to retire on his own terms. Going out on a win. Demetrius Johnson on the Mount Rushmore of MMA fighters. But the one thing I wanted to touch on quickly before we get into some pop culture news is the UFC 307 bout order. Okay, UFC 307, of course, going down October 5th. It is a random card. All right, let me tell you that. Of course, headlined by Alex Pereira and Khalil Roundtree Jr., co-main event, Rafael Pena and Julia Pena. Let me read you some of the fights on the prelims right now. Or should I go with the main card? So the main card has Wonderboy Thompson and Joaquin Buckley. That's okay. All right, then you also have Jose Aldo and Mario Bautista. Okay, you know what? You got Wonderboy Thompson, Jose Aldo, legends. You then have Caitlin Vieira and Kayla Harrison, which I understand is technically the number one contenders fight for the Women's Bantamweight Championship. But on the prelims, you have Roman Dolidze and Kevin Holland. Kevin Holland is a main event fighter. Kevin Holland is an attraction. I don't necessarily think he should be on the prelims. And this fight is the main reason I wanted to talk about this, is the fact that Muzaffar Evlov and Aljamain Sterling are on the prelims. Muzaffar Evlov is the number 6 featherweight in the world. Aljamain Sterling, the number 8. This is for the next title shot, most likely. Muzaffar Evlov, mind you, if you didn't know, 18-0 undefeated. Aljamain Sterling, former bantamweight champion. There is no reason this fight should be on the prelims, and Caitlin Vieira and Kayla Harrison is on the main card. That makes no sense to me. You also got Marina Rodriguez on this card. Ryan Spann and Elvin St. Cruz, I mentioned. Carla Esparza is having her retirement fight against Tisha Payton on the early prelims. This is just, Dolidze and Holland and Muzaffar Evlov and Aljamain Sterling, those are definitely two fights for if we lose someone on the main card, they can step in. But, you know, Wonderboy Thompson, Joaquin Buckley, I like that. Jose Aldo, Mario Bautista. Is Jose Aldo back to fight for a belt? Like, what is Jose doing? I feel like he retired, you know, went away on his time, but now he's back against Mario Bautista. I personally would have put that on the prelims, if I'm being honest. Kevin Holland is much more exciting, and Evlov and Sterling is just such a high-level fight, but hey, what are you going to do? That's just how the UFC matchmakers see this. I can't really complain. I mean, I'm getting a UFC pay-per-view, nonetheless, but very interesting matchmaking. Not too many fights have been announced, and I doubt none will be. One quick little note before we talk about pop culture. I do find it interesting that we are now officially 2 months away from UFC 309, and we have no info on that card whatsoever. We have one fight announced that's of notoriety. That is the light heavyweight matchup between Nikita Krylov and the undefeated Aslam Mirzakhanov. Still don't know if Jon Jones is fighting on there. We will have to see, but yeah, very interesting stuff going on there. So yeah, let's get right into our little pop culture, a little talking about that top 10 new things in pop culture. Round of applause. That's a round of applause for all the stars, all the interesting things that have been going on. So number one, Tyrese Gibson has been arrested for failing to pay enough child support. The judges handed him an opportunity to avoid jail time if he pays $73,500 within 48 hours. Of course, the Transformers star, the Fast and the Furious star, Tyrese Gibson. Very interesting here that he is not paying his child support. To get on that, Tyrese, you should not be doing that. Number two, the unfortunate news released today that the legendary James Earl Jones, of course, the voice of Darth Vader. I'm trying to think who else James Earl has been. Because I know he's been a lot of people. He's been Darth Vader. I swear it was someone else. Maybe it is just Darth Vader. Oh, he's the voice behind cinema's greatest villain. I thought it was villains plural, but yes. The great James Earl Jones has passed away, 93 years old, born in 1931. I think he lived a very full life, fulfilling. I pray that his soul rests peacefully. Amazing stuff. Very, very happy for him with all he accomplished in his career. And my condolences go out to his family. Number three, Tom Holland and Zendaya are both working on new deals to return for Spider-Man 4. Destin Daniel Cretton, the Shang-Chi director, will of course be the director. Chris McKenna and Eric Summers, who wrote the previous three Spider-Man films, are returning to write the script. Very interesting. Filming is designed to begin early 2025. So we are not going away from the Zendaya storyline. We are going to keep her in this with Tom Holland as Spider-Man. Very interesting. It's good to know that the same script writers are here, which means the movies are going to actually feel similar. But, Shang-Chi, some people didn't like Shang-Chi. People like me like Shang-Chi. So I'll be interested to see how a Shang-Chi director will correlate to a Spider-Man film. I mean, just looking at the tones of both. Interesting, interesting. Bum-bum-bum-bum. Vincent D'Onofrio has been cast in Darren Aronofsky's crime thriller Caught Stealing. The film follows a former baseball player plunged into the criminal underworld of 90s New York City. It also stars Zoe Kravitz, Regina King, Matt Smith, Liv Schreiber, Bad Bunny, and Austin Butler. Well, sign me up. I'm going to be watching this once it comes out. I absolutely love that. Love me a little Austin Butler, little Zoe Kravitz. I mean, Vincent D'Onofrio, amazing. Bad Bunny? I actually like Bad Bunny in WWE, surprisingly. Number, what are we on? Four, five? Number five. Elizabeth Olsen says she would love to return as Scarlet Witch when there's a way to use her well. I think people didn't know what to do with me for a second there. If there's a good way to use her, I'm always down to come back. And thank you for acknowledging that, Elizabeth Olsen, that they absolutely fumbled her character. They had her be the villain slash hero in WandaVision. Then she became the actual villain in what's the film called that I'm thinking of? In Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness. It just didn't work. No one really saw her as this big evil villain. She just wanted to get back with her kids and was just doing maniacal ways of getting there. There's a lot of issues with that film, but I'm happy that Elizabeth Olsen wants to return. And, speaking of the MCU, this will bring me to my sixth point. Don Cheadle shared his reaction to Robert Downey Jr. playing Dr. Doom. He said, "I was like, what the F? Everything is clay right now. They're rewriting, they're reworking, and so I honestly can't even tease anything anymore." Interesting stuff there. I think MCU. Marvel, I was going to say, is kind of in a very interesting spot right now. I know they got Disney Plus shows coming out left and right. I have not watched any. And in terms of movies, I mean, Deadpool Wolverine, a huge success, one of my favorite movies I've seen in the MCU. Other than that, Captain America Brave New World, it looks okay. It looks okay. I have my mixed, excuse me, mixed feelings on that. And they also got the Thunderbolts film. That's another new team. I always like to point out the fact that the Eternals, we've just never referenced the Eternals again. Really, I feel like I know they're all going to tie together somehow, but I'm very curious how they're all going to tie it together. Number seven, Apple has revealed they will soon allow users to AI generate their own emojis. And as scary as that may seem, I mean, it is. It is expected. It's also interesting. I also don't want to know what they're going to ask AI. Probably a lot of weird stuff. But AI is taking just a huge takeover of the world, right? AI is taking over. And, people are like, oh, AI is going to take people's jobs. No, the people that know how to use AI will take your job. And that's why I'm trying to learn how to use it. I've used it for class. I used it for my internship this summer. And heck, I use it in my spare time when I want to learn stuff. Number eight, Happy Gilmore 2 has officially begun filming, coming soon to Netflix. Just another example of the studios nowadays cannot come up with anything original. Anything original. But why do we need a Happy Gilmore 2, 20 years after the original came out? We do not need that at all. And on top of that, I have another one for you. I have another one for you. First look at the Young Sheldon sequel series, George and Mandy's First Marriage. That is right. They are bringing back more Young Sheldon characters. They just can't let a series go away. The studios really need to come up with unique stuff. And I mean, think about Dune, for example. They were able to come up with Dune, which isn't an old idea, but it was kind of, irrelevant, and that worked perfectly fine. But then they're just doing sequels on top of sequels, and it's getting utterly ridiculous. So I don't really know what to think about it. Number nine, I'm trying to think. I saw the Emmys were going on. A lot of stuff went on there, but I don't pay attention to any of that because I find it all a joke. So what's something I can bring up? Yeah, speaking of Dune, what do you know? Denis Villeneuve reveals the script for Dune 3 is in the works to be written. And I have a lot of faith in Denis Villeneuve, amazing director. If no one's ever seen Sicario, please go see it. If no one's ever seen Prisoners, please go see it. He's absolutely fantastic. I think he wrote Prisoners, if I'm not mistaken. But Dune 3, I have a feeling he is not going to follow the book's way of doing things. I feel like Dennis is going to stray from that, create this own thing, and make it something memorable to wrap up the trilogy. I'm here for it. Love me a little Dune. And number 10, what's the final thing I can touch on? A lot of stuff has come out here and here. How about this? Alien Romulus has officially passed $300 million worldwide as of yesterday, September 8th. The budget was $80 million, still proof that the Alien films can make a ton of money for the studio. I haven't seen it. I'll probably watch it at home. But honestly, I watched all the other Alien films. They all kind of sucked. So we'll have to see what Romulus does. But hey, when you've made $220 million in profit, that means you probably cooked up a good movie, I should better phrase that as. So that's all your new news in pop culture. Let me know if you guys want to learn anything else about culture. I'm always happy to share. Oh, another point for you. Bonus number 11. Peacemaker Season 2 will release in the second half of 2025. Love me a little John Cena as Peacemaker. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm just too excited to get into this. Recapping week one of the NFL, excluding the 49ers and Jets game. Go Debo, boo Aaron Rodgers. That's my opinion on it. Let's get into it. We've had 15 games so far, so we have 15 games to go through. We'll talk about some top fantasy performances, state of every team, and what predictions we got right and wrong. Let's get right on into it. And what's a good transition I can add? I'm trying to see. What's this do? And we're going to the NFL. Yeah, I'll learn how to use a soundboard. Let me tell you. All right, let's get right into it. I will save everyone the time of me going through all my fantasy teams, but I didn't want to say my best performance was in my 10-man random league and my family league. I'm going to win in both of those. My 16-man league, most likely going to lose. In my 10-man $500 league, most likely going to use that. And in my sleeper league, probably going to lose there. But 149-81 currently is an absolutely fantastic way to win week one. But let's kick things off with our first matchup of the season, which was the Ravens versus the Chiefs. And the Ravens unfortunately lost 27-20. Very good game, though. Okay, a very good game. Came down to the wire, came down to the final play, and Isaiah Likely just couldn't get his toes in and unfortunately lost. So you are going to be starting off Chiefs on top, Ravens on bottom. But, I mean, Lamar Jackson, 26.12 fantasy points. He went 26 out of 41, 273 yards, and a passing touchdown. And he also rushed for, guys, 122 yards. Are you freaking kidding me? Incredible stuff right there. Also for them, Isaiah Likely, 26.1 fantasy points. Might be the number one tight end right now. I honestly think he is. 9 catches, 111 yards, and 1 touchdown. Justice Hill, 11.5 fantasy points, was the third best fantasy performer for them. Justice had 1 rush for 3 yards, but it was his 6 catches for 52 yards that really did him well. Derrick Henry, very underwhelming, 46 yards rushing, was able to punch in 1 touchdown. Other than that, Rashad Bateman, 2 catches, 53 yards. Zay Flowers, 6 catches, 37 yards. Nothing too impressive. Now, I will say for the Chiefs, they look as good as they did last year. I mean, Xavier Worthy, 20.8 fantasy points. Rashee Rice, 17.3 fantasy points. Isaiah Pacheco, 15.8. Mahomes, 20 of 28, 291 yards, touchdown and a pick. Also rushed for 3 yards, if that matters. He looked good. All right, he looked like a guy who led a team to a Super Bowl. Pacheco, 15 rushes, 44 yards, a touchdown. The rookie Xavier Worthy was so impressive. He had this crazy 20-yard run for a touchdown. Just has the gas. He also caught 2 passes, one of which for a touchdown. Yeah, he's their top guy right now. But also have Rashee Rice, 7 catches, 103 yards. Travis Kelce, only 3 catches for 34 4 yards. I think both of these teams are going to be pretty good when it comes to this season. You know, the Ravens are hungry to already get back at them in the playoffs or something. But, I mean, it's tough to see either of these teams losing in the foreseeable future. We'll see what happens next week. But as for now, Chiefs on top, 27-20, and the reigning Super Bowl champions get the season going with a W. We then headed Friday to a little matchup, and I finally got a correct game. You know what? I predicted the Ravens would win. I was incorrect there. I predicted the Eagles would win. I was correct. And 34-29, it was a barn burner game. Came down to the final play. Jordan Love did get hurt, which is unfortunate, but that didn't stop him from getting 17 fantasy points. Josh Jacobs had 12, but it was Jaden Reed with 33.1 who stole the show for my NFC divisional rival, my least favorite team in the league, the Packers. So Jaden Reed, great work there. Saquon Barkley, 34.2 fantasy points. Yeah, damn right, he's my starting running back in my 16-man league, and he's the best fantasy player as of right now. Saquon Barkley, very impressive. A.J. Brown, 22.9 fantasy points, and Jalen Hurts, 17.4. Two, and I mean, this game was start off pretty dull. First quarter, 6-0, just 2 field goals from the Packers. Then, 2 touchdowns from both teams in the second quarter got it going. Third quarter, we saw 3 touchdowns, but it all came down to a Jake Elliott field goal to put them up ahead by 5 points with 27 seconds left, and that was that. Green Bay, 260 yards for Jordan Love, 2 touchdowns at pick. He is going to be out, though, for 3 to 4 weeks. Malik Willis stepping in for them. Josh Jacobs, only 84 yards. It was Jaden Reed's 1 rush for 33 yards and touchdown. He also had 4 catches, 138 yards and touchdown. Christian Watson caught touchdown. I could really care less. But, I mean, let's talk about the Eagles. Jalen Hurts, 278 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks, though. That'll do a doozy for you. But it's Saquon. Where is he at? 2 catches, 23 yards for a touchdown. He also rushed 109 yards for 2 touchdowns. Yeah, he's the top running back in the league right now. Devontae Smith, 7 catches, 84 yards. A.J. Brown, 5 catches, 119 yards at touchdown. He was so good, absolutely torching me in fantasy. Eagles, man, looking freaking nasty to start the season. They will keep their spot atop the NFC East. As for the Packers, as of right now, they're actually the worst team in the NFC North. Every NFC North team won, except the Packers. That's a good day in my book, if you ask me. And by the way, we're going to get to the Vikings. They're the number one team in the NFC North. You love to see it. After that, we got into Sunday football, and let's start off with a little Bills and Cardinals, which we predicted correctly. We had the Bills winning, and the Bills got it done. It wasn't easy. Let me tell you that it was not easy whatsoever. The game starts off, it's 10-0, all right? Then it's 17-3, but then 3 unanswered touchdowns led to the Bills taking the lead. It was then back and forth before with under 2 minutes. Tyler Bass hits a field goal to put him up 6, and the Bills get the win here, 34-28. You did actually see a 96-yard kickoff return from DJ Dallas, so very impressive stuff there, actually seeing a kickoff return. Josh Allen, 31.18 fantasy points, absolute monster. James Conner, we'll give him some props, 19.3 fantasy points there. Kyler Murray, 162 yards and a touchdown, rushed 5 times for 57 yards. You know, he looked like a guy who needed to get back in the rhythm after missing most of last season. James Conner, 50 yards rushing, got a touchdown in for you. Also had 3 catches for 33 yards. 6 catches and 47 yards for Dortch led the way for them. As for the rookie, Marvin Harrison Jr., 1 catch, 4 yards. Yeah, and everyone was drafting him high. Not me. Let's talk about the current best QB in the league, though. That's right, statistically, Josh Allen, 232 yards, 2 touchdowns, also rushed 39 yards for 2 touchdowns. That's right, 4 touchdown day for Josh Allen. Very impressive. James Cook, 71 yards rushing. Shakir caught a touchdown. Keon Coleman was the top target guy, 4 catches, 51 yards. And Matt Collins, how about that? 2 catches, 25 yards, and 8 touchdowns. Dawson Knox, 1 catch, 23 yards. Dalton Kincaid, 1 catch, 11 yards. Clearly we don't like Dalton Kincaid. I thought he was going to be a top guy. I guess not. Unfortunate. Then let's get into the biggest upset of the past 5 years, betting-wise. Absolutely crazy. As the Patriots beat the Bengals. You can't even make it up. The Patriots beat the Bengals at home. All right. They beat the Patriots. They beat the Bengals in Cincinnati. You cannot even make it up. Absolutely crazy if you ask me. Ramondre Stevenson, 22.6 fantasy points. New England defense, 12 points. The kicker, Joy Sly, 10 points. It was everyone but the offense getting it done for the Patriots. Their defense, special teams, amazing. I mean, Ramondre, he led the offense, I should better say. Zach Moss, 14 fantasy points. Ja'Marr Chase, 12. Joe Burrow, 8. What the frick even happened? It was 10-0 at halftime. Okay, then it was 13-0. Finally, 13-7 heading into the fourth. And just, the Bengals just couldn't score. They couldn't get it done. Jacoby Brissett, 121 yards, showing that he's a top backup. 25 rushes for 120 yards and a touchdown. Ramondre was an absolute staff. What is it? A spreadsheet stuffer? Stat sheet stuffer? Score, something stuffer. I know exactly the term I'm looking for, but can't really place it. Joe Burrow, 21 of 29 on completions. Not bad. Only 164 yards. You know, Zach Moss, only 9 rushes, 44 yards, was able to punch in their only touchdown. Ja'Marr Chase, 6 catches, 62 yards, was the only one doing stuff. The Bengals, they just couldn't do anything. And the Patriots defense didn't do an amazing job here. And this is a very lackadaisical look at, of course, week one for the NFL. We're going to be looking at yardage probably from now on. But I can only assume the Bengals did not get a lot of yardage. Did not predict this upset. Was not the game I was looking at. Props to the Patriots, though. You're getting the year started with a W. And as far as the NFC East goes, every team has won except the Jets. So we'll have to see what happens there. After that, my favorite win of the week, guys. Of course, if no one knows, I'm a Minnesota Vikings fan. If you've listened to the podcast, you know I'm from Minnesota. And my Vikings manhandled the Giants. And, you know, I honestly would think they should, but this team was not expected to be good. And we won 28-6. We have not even given up a touchdown yet to start out the NFL season. That's pretty good, if you ask me. Our defense, 21 fantasy points. Holy cow. Aaron Jones, 18 fantasy points. Jefferson, 15. Decent day all around. Wandale Robinson, 11.8. Most for the Giants. Malik Nabers, 11.6. That was that. First quarter, you know, start off rough for the Vikings. I mean, Graham Gano hit a field goal. We fumbled. Our defense was looking good, but we couldn't get anything going. Then, you know, under 4 minutes left, Aaron Jones punts it, touchdown. Nice little run there. Then, second quarter, halfway through, Justin Jefferson, touchdown pass. Doesn't get much better than that. Jalen Naylor would then sneak in a little touchdown to kick off third quarter. Graham Gano would kick in a big 50-yard field goal, and then Andrew Van Ginkle would get a 10-yard pick six. And fourth quarter, we just rounded out dominantly, got it done. Not much more you can ask for, guys. Sam Darnold, 208 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 pick, 19 of 24. All right, he started the game 10 for 10 on completion. Sam Darnold was looking good. Aaron Jones, 14 rushes, 94 yards, and a touchdown. Love to see that. JJ, 4 catches, 15 yards, and a tutty. One downside, Jordan Addison got hurt. 3 catches, 35 yards. I really hope that he gets better. I mean, Josh Oliver looked good. Ty Chandler was doing what he needed to do. I'm happy with this team. I really am. Giants, I would be concerned. Your fans were booing you, all right? The Giants got booed out of the stadium. Daniel Jones, 22 for 42, 20 incompletions, only 186 yards through 2 picks. Singletary on 10 carries, only 37 yards, you know. Blake Nabers, 5 catches, 66 yards. Wandale Robinson, 6 catches, 44 yards is the only real positive you can find. Giants not looking good, already starting off the season with a minus 22-point differential. One of the worst yet so far in the NFL. And for a team that went out in the offseason, made some interesting plays, dealt Xavier McKinney, dealt Saquon Barkley, brought in Brian Burns, just did not look that good. So Vikings, 28 points for 6 points against. We're starting off the season, best team in the NFC North, undefeated. You know, there can only be 16 undefeated teams that kick off the season. Of course, if you'd lunch, you have a tie, and the Vikings are one of those 15 teams, or one of those 16 we'll see after tonight. Giants, you are bottom of the NFC East. Bottom of the NFC East, atrocious. I don't know if they're going to win a game all year, but I'm happy for my Vikings. I absolutely love it. Then, for some reason on the podcast, we predicted the Titans, but on ESPN picks, I said the Bears were going to win. And son of a gun, the Titans should be worried because the Bears strung it together, and the Bears win 24-17. Tony Pollard, 18.4 fantasy points, the only good fantasy performer for the Titans. And it's clear they're giving Pollard the workload over Tajay Spears. As for the Bears, Bears defense, 26 points. Carlos Santos, 13 points. That's right. That's right. The Vikings defense, the Bears defense, the Cowboys defense, some of the best defenses you're going to see in the entire league. I mean, 26 fantasy points for the Bears. It don't get much better than that. A 43-yard pick six by Tyreek Stevenson. It was incredible. Game starts off 17-0. How about that? Then Carlos Santos, right before halftime, sneaks one in. All right. 17-3 heading into the third quarter. Jonathan Owens, 21-yard return of a blocked punt. Good job, Bears defense. After that, Carlos Santos, 250-yard field goals, a pick six by the Bears. They win 24-17. That's right, 24 unanswered points. Impressive. I will say it flat out. I'm sorry, Bears. I will not pick against you, okay? Maybe not this upcoming week. We can play the Texans, but I will be more cautious, all right? Titans, very big L. Big L for the Titans. Will Levis, 127 yards, a touchdown, two picks. That's not going to do it. Tony Pollard, 82 yards and a touchdown. That'll do it. That's beautiful. Three catches, 12 yards will help. But Calvin Ridley, three catches, 50 yards, the only one doing anything. DeAndre Hopkins, one catch, 8 yards. Will, you really got to get it going. And mind you, the Bears offense sucked. The Bears offense was atrocious. Caleb Williams, 14 of 29, 93 yards. Oh my goodness. And don't get me wrong, he didn't turn it over, but 93 yards? That's unheard of in the NFL. DeAndre Swift, 10 rushes, 30 yards. DJ Moore, 5 catches, 36 yards. Keenan Allen, 4 catches, 29 yards. Romo Dunes, he had 1 catch for 11 yards, and I'm pretty sure he got hurt. Bears, your offense has really got to get it going if you're going to compete, but your defense is currently the best in the league. As for the Titans, guys, 17-0 to then lose 24-17. Something's got to get going there. Big miss on our part. Then my upset pick of the week, the Panthers over the Saints. Holy cow, that was a huge miss on my part, because apparently the Panthers deprogressed from last year. I kid you not, the Panthers looked worse than last year. If you're a Saints fan, you currently now have the highest points total for the year, the biggest point differential. As of right now, the Saints are technically the best team in the league, meaning a divisional opponent by 37 points, 47-10. Saints run through the Panthers. Bryce Young, 9.64 fantasy points. The highest score for their team. Derek Carr, 22.3 fantasy points. Alvin Kamara, 22 fantasy points. And, of course, the kicker, Rump, 22 fantasy points. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Game starts off first quarter, 17-0. Okay? Then 20-0. Then 23-0. Then 32-0. Holy cow, thank God, eh? Eddie Pinheiro was able to kick a field goal right before halftime. Sending it in, 30-3. Alvin Kamara would then make it 37. Finally, Bryce Young would run in a touchdown in the third quarter. Then 10 more points added, including a Jamal Williams touchdown, 14-yarder. Great work by him. 47-10, amazing work there. Bryce Young, 13 of 30, 161 yards, two picks. The difference I noticed week one between good QBs and bad QBs was insane, if you ask me. You were either hot or you were cold, and Bryce Young was very cold. Miles Sanders, 5 rushes, 22 yards. Chubb Hubbard, 6 rushes, 14 yards. Bryce Young, the only one that could even get a score in. Xavier Leggett, 4 catches, 35 yards. I think Xavier Leggett, working with what he can be good, but he doesn't have much to work with. Deontay Johnson, 2 catches, 19 yards. Adam Thielen led the way with 49 yards on 3 catches. Just not going to get it done. Derek Carr, 200 yards, only 4 incompletions, 3 touchdowns. How about that? Alvin Kamara, 83 yards and a touchdown. Jamal Williams, 38 yards and a touchdown. Rashid Shaheed, 3 catches, 73 yards and a touchdown. He was an absolute dime today, including a 60-yarder touchdown. Foster Moreau, 43 catches, 43 yards, not catches, and a touchdown. And Juwan Johnson, how about that? A little tight end you, how about that? Good work to them. Chris Olave, only 2 catches, 11 yards. I always love to see it when the stars are shining. Good job, Rashid Shaheed. I'll always root for you, even if you're not on my fantasy team. And the Saints, man, starting off the year with a bang. After that, another matchup we missed on, and Seth, I am completely sorry. I should have never bet against them. The Steelers beat the Falcons 18-10. Oh, my goodness. And Chris Boswell, 26 points. You may be asking yourself, oh, Zach, who got the touchdowns for the Steelers? Yeah, how about 6 field goals kicked by Chris Boswell? He's a workhorse out there. George Pickens, 13.5 fantasy points. He was finding ways to make it work. Pittsburgh D, 13 points. One of the top defenses in the league. Bijan, 16 fantasy points. Kyle Pitts, 11.6. Ray McLeod, 9.2. And I mean, Young Hoku got the game going with a field goal. Not too bad. Chris Boswell would answer with a 57-yarder. He'd then hit one to kick off the second quarter, 51-yarder. Kyle Pitts would catch a touchdown pass from Kirk Cousins with 30 seconds left. And then the Steelers would somehow make it down the field in 30 seconds to set up a 44-yarder from Chris Boswell. Then 2 more field goals in the third quarter from Chris Boswell. 1 more field goal to make it a 8-point lead. And the Falcons just couldn't do anything. It was crazy. Justin Fields started 17 of 23, 156 yards. Ran 14 times for 57 yards. Not bad. I will say, he did not look as bad as you did on the Bears. Now, certainly similar statistics, but he's getting there. He's really getting there. And, you know, when I look at George Pickens, 6 catches, 85 yards, he was doing his work. Pat Freiermuth, 4 catches, 27 yards, doing what he could. You know, Najee, 20 rushes, only 70 yards. We don't really like that. But Pittsburgh, starting the year off with a W, and I don't think anyone else won in the AFC North. No, Browns, Ravens, and Bengals are lost. So how about that? Steelers, the only team to win in the NFC North. Good job, Seth. Very good job. Kirk Cousins' debut, 16 of 26, 155 yards, a touchdown, and 2 picks. Not going to do it. Not going to do it, Kirk. That contract is not looking very pretty right now. All right, it is not looking very pretty. I'm just gonna be honest. Okay, it's not looking too pretty. Bijan, 18 rushes, 68 yards, caught 5 catches, 43 yards. Can only do as much as he was given. Ray McLeod, 4 catches, 52 yards, led the way. And Kyle Pitts caught the only touchdown. Drake London, only 2 catches. Daryl Mooney, only 1 catch. Yeah, Falcons did not look that good. Did not look that good. I don't know. It's gonna be a long season. Maybe Kyle Pitts is hurt. We don't know, but rough stuff for the Falcons. After that, the Dolphins, of course, I picked them to win, and son of a gun, they had my heart racing a bit as they kicked off the game going down 17-7. Was a little worried, but then how about a perfect 13-0 second half, including an 80-yard touchdown catch from none other than Tyreek Hill, who was arrested that morning. How random was that? Was arrested, came back, got it done. Jason Sanders hit 2 big field goals in the fourth quarter, that is. The rookie, Brian Thomas Jr. for the Jaguars, leading the way with 14.7 fantasy points. Love him. Travis Etienne, 11.9. Expect a bit more, but the 3 stars. Tyreek Hill, 26 fantasy points. Devin Achane, 23. And Tua Tagovailoa, almost 20, 19.62. Trevor Lawrence, 162 yards and a touchdown. Just looked average, man. Tank Bigsby had more rushing yards than Travis Etienne. They split the touches there. Very fascinating. Gabe Davis, 3 catches, 62 yards, had the most yardage, but most catches went to Brian Thomas Jr., the rookie, 4 catches, 47 yards, got the only touchdown, love to see it. Evan Engram, only 1 catch for 5 yards. Top tight ends did not have the best week 1. Very surprising. And your passing leader, of course, is Tua Tagovailoa as of right now. 338 yards, a touchdown, no picks. Devin Achane, 10 rushes, 24 yards, and a touchdown. Couldn't really get it going on the ground, but Tyreek, 7 catches, 130 yards and a touchdown. Jalen Waddle, 5 catches, 109 yards. Devin Achane, 7 catches, 76 yards. Yeah. Yeah, this offense is good. They are very talented. Of course, we knew they were one of the best offenses in the league. We already knew that. Dolphins, I mean, helping the AFC East currently get a sweep. You know, they're 3-0 right now. We'll see if the Jets can get it done. That game should be starting in about 6 minutes. Probably won't be catching it then. But yeah. Yeah. As for the Jags, AFC South, everyone but the Texans, taking an L. Just yeah. That's all I really have to say about that. Interesting stuff. I won't lie. I look at all these results, and I'm taken aback at times. But let's keep it rolling. Texans and Colts, as we just mentioned. Joe Mixon, 27.8 fantasy points. I mean, come on. People are calling him washed. People are saying don't pick him. Almost gets a 30 bomb. Stephon Diggs, 21.9. And CJ Stroud, 18.66. You're damn right the Texans are good. You're damn right. Anthony Richardson, 28.08. He's as good as claimed to be. Alec Pierce, 21.5 fantasy points. Hello. What a game, guys. What an absolute masterpiece. First quarter, 7-6, including a 60-yard touchdown pass from Anthony Richardson to Alec Pierce. Stephon Diggs would then catch a little touchdown pass from CJ Stroud. 51-yarder from Kymie Fairbairn. Jonathan Taylor, punch a little 5-yard touchdown run. Joe Mixon, we get the fourth quarter going with a 3-yard touchdown pass. Ashton Doolin, 54-yard touchdown pass from Anthony Richardson. Stephon Diggs would punch in his second touchdown of the day with under 5 minutes. Anthony Richardson would get a little 3-yard run in. Spencer Schrader would kick the extra point, but just was not enough in the end. CJ Stroud, 234 yards and 2 touchdowns. Joe Mixon is currently second best running back in the league when we look at stats behind Saquon. 30 rushes, though, 159 yards and a touchdown. I mean, he looks better than he did in Cincinnati. It is incredible, if you ask me. Nico Collins, 6 catches, 117 yards. Diggs, 6 catches, 2 touchdowns. Tank Dell, 3 catches, 40 yards. it was an impressive performance from the Texans. They're as good as advertised. And when all they're talking about is the wide receiver core and then the running backs, you know, Joe Mixon runs all over you, it is fun to see. Super fun to see. Richardson only completed 9 passes on 19 attempts, 212 yards, 2 touchdowns, threw a pick. Jonathan Taylor, 16 rushes, 48 yards, punched in a touchdown. But it's Alec Pierce, 3 catches, 125 yards and a touchdown. Best stat line I've seen. Pittman had 4 catches, 31 yards. Very odd stat line for the Colts. But I, you know, as much as they're kicking off the season with a loss, this should be a sign of hope with how good your team did against a team in the Texans, who people are saying are going to the Super Bowl, all right? I would not be disappointed with this at all. And I mean, everyone else lost in the AFC South, and you're going to play them again later this year. I would not lose hope, guys. This was an impressive performance. But, you know, you didn't win. It's okay. We then got into our 3 o'clock games, and I missed on this one, guys. I thought the Raiders would come out, beat the Chargers at home. I guess not. Absolutely guess not. Chargers win 22-10, and the Raiders looked bad, too. I can't lie. I can't lie. The Raiders just did not have it. Madison, 16.2 fantasy points. Brock Bowers, 11.8. Devontae Adams, 10.9. They did as much as they could, really. J.K. Dobbins, 23.9, breakout game for the Chargers, and also Chargers D, 15 points. Ladd McConkey, 14.9, rookie of the year, how about that? Ladd McConkey caught a touchdown in the fourth quarter, love to see that. J.K. Dobbins had an amazing 12-yard touchdown run. But Masson, you know, punched in a touchdown in the first quarter, and that was that. That was all the Raiders did all game. Gardner, 257 yards, touchdown and pick. Seems like a typical Gardner line. Zamir White, 13 rushes, 44 yards. It's not going to be enough. Never will be enough. Jacoby Myers, Devontae, Brock Bowers, doing all they could on offense. But just the Chargers defense looked very good in this game. Very good. Herbert didn't look the best. 144 yards and a touchdown. It really came down to J.K. Dobbins, 135 yards rushing. All right. And him and Gus, by the way, split touches, 10 and 11. But yeah, Gus is more of your tank. J.K. Dobbins, your fighter jet. I think I've used that analogy before. But yeah, you know, despite losing Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, Chargers kicking off the season with a W. Impressive stuff for the Los Angeles Chargers. Another 3:30 game was the Broncos versus the Seahawks. I just knew the Seahawks were going to get this one done. They were at home. They had all the momentum. They always play better at home. Kenneth Walker, 19.9 fantasy points. Amazing. Geo Smith, 17.84. Decent. Tyler Lockett, 13.7. Very surprising. Lee in the day, D-Vell for the Broncos, 11.9. Other than that, not much. Not much at all. The Broncos actually got a safety in the second quarter. Other than that, not a single touchdown except a Bo Nix run with 2 minutes remaining. Yeah, Bo Nix, 138 yards, 2 picks. Did not look good. Rookie QB is not having the best day. McLaughlin, 10 rushes, 27 yards. Javonte Williams, 8 rushes, 23 yards. Not a lot. I mean, Courtland Sutton, 4 catches, 30 yards. Just Broncos did not look good. The Broncos just did not look like a good team. Seahawks, they, Kenneth Walker, 20 rushes, 103 yards, and a touchdown. Impressive. Jackson Smith and Jigba, 2 catches, 19 yards. DK Metcalf, 3 catches, 29 yards. Very underwhelming. Lockett was the main guy, 6 catches, 77 yards. Run-of-the-mill win. Run-of-the-mill win here, Seahawks. Looked okay, nothing special. Broncos just, you know, the Broncos, Giants, Panthers, it's almost like nothing changed from last season. It's almost like all three of those teams deprogressed. Not many positives there. Now, yeah, there are some positives, though. That is the Dallas Cowboys. They had a great day. Brandon Aubrey, 21 fantasy points. Dallas D, 19 fantasy points. Brandon Cooks, 14.5. As CeeDee and Dak kind of took the back seat. 4 fantasy points and the 33-17 win for Dallas. Jerome Ford, 18.9 fantasy points. Led the day for them. Nothing really much here. The Browns just couldn't really get anything going. Jerry Jeudy caught a touchdown pass in the third. Jerome Ford ran in a touchdown with 29 seconds left in garbage time. Dallas was just dominant. Dak, 179 yards and a touchdown. Ezekiel Elliott rushed 10 times for 40 yards. That was that. Dowdle, 8 rushes, 26 yards. TD, 5 catches, 61 yards. Brandon Cooks, 4 catches, 4 yards and a touchdown. Really just came down to Brandon Aubrey just hitting 1, 2, 3, 4, 4 field goals. Did we need to do? Deshaun Watson, 169 yards. Touchdown, 2 picks. Looked terrible as ever. Jerome Ford, 44 rushes. A touchdown was okay. Just, yeah, pretty bland 330 games, if I'm being honest. The big highlight of the 330 games was the Commanders versus the Buccaneers, just with how good a lot of the players looked in this. Buccaneers win 37-20. Jaden Daniels, 28.16 points for the rookie. Incredible. 17.9 for Brian Robinson Jr. Baker Mayfield, 29.66 fantasy points. That's right. He's the second best QB fantasy-wise right now. Incredible. Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, 23 and 22 fantasy points. It's like they went nowhere. Incredible stuff from both of them. Jaden Daniels, 184 yards, 88 yards rushing for 2 touchdowns. Very surprising. Brian Robinson Jr. had a 12-rush game for 1 touchdown. Austin Eckler, 4 catches, 52 yards, led the day. Scary Terry, only 2 catches for 17 yards. Buccaneers, Baker Mayfield, 289 yards, 4 touchdowns. That's right. Rashad White, 15 catches, 31 yards. Couldn't really get it going. Did have 6 catches for 75 yards, but it was kind of held in check. Mike Evans, 5 catches, 61 yards for 2 touchdowns. Godwin, 8 catches, 83 yards for a touchdown. Looking good. Buggy Irving ended up having the most rushing yards at 62 for the rookie. Bucks looking pretty good compared to all the other teams in their division. Them and the Saints really shone. The Commanders are better than last year. I will give you that. Commanders are better than last year. Let's just hope Jaden Daniels doesn't get hurt. That would really kill the momentum. And then the final game for this week. We correctly predicted this one. The Lions beat the Rams in an overtime game. We already got overtime. Exciting stuff. Cooper Kupp, 32 fantasy points. Wow. Unprecedented amount. Stafford, 14. Kyren Williams, 14. It was actually Jameson Williams who led the Lions with 24 fantasy points. Jahmyr Gibbs had 17. David Montgomery, 16. And, man, this was close. Back and forth. Heading into halftime, it was 10-3 for the Lions. Then it suddenly became 10-17. Then it was 10-13. Then it was 20-20. We go to overtime. Lions opening drive. Dave Montgomery punches in a touchdown. Stafford threw 49 attempts, completed 34 of them, 317 yards, touchdown, and a pick. Kyren had 50 yards rushing for a touchdown. Cooper Kupp, 14 catches, 110 yards and a touchdown. Oh, Puka Nacua, 4 catches, 35 yards, and got injured. Hate to see it. Detroit, Goff, 217 yards, touchdown, and a pick. David Montgomery, more rushes than Jahmyr, 91 yards for a touchdown. Jahmyr, 40 yards rushing for a touchdown. Jameson Williams, 121 yards receiving, 5 catches, 1 touchdown. Amon Ross St. Brown, only 3 catches for 13 yards. Sam Laporta, 4 catches, 45 yards. Was able to lead me to victory with one final catch, but rather than that, Lions getting it done. Rams didn't look too bad. I will say Matthew Stafford looks aged. And I just don't know what his ceiling is. I don't know how far Matthew Stafford can go this year, but hey, pretty good opening week one. I'm here for it all season. We're going to be recapping the games, looking at them. It's going to be a fun year. It's going to be a very fun year. That is your NFL week one recap. Talk about some fantasy points and stuff there. I'll be interested to see what the waiver wire produces. But ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to our final point, which is our UFC Vegas 97 recap. We had a bunch of action coming at you. We go 7-5 on predictions, 221 and 142 on the year now. You know, 7-5 isn't too bad. Nailed some stuff, missed on some other stuff. Let's talk about all of it. Kicking off the night, we had a little featherweight matchup between Nathan Fletcher and Zygomantas Ramaskov rematch. Or actually, this fight was not a rematch. It was supposed to take place on The Ultimate Fighter, but Zygomantas pulled out. Zygomantas was actually supposed to be in the finals. Instead, he wound up fighting Nathan Fletcher. And Nathan Fletcher leaned on the grappling in this one and actually got a round 2 arm triangle. Nathan Fletcher's 7th career submission. Good win for Nathan Fletcher. Nathan Fletcher now on a 3-fight win streak. And round 1, name of the game, 3 of 4 on takedowns, 2.5 minutes of control time. And don't get me wrong, Zygomantas, he threw up a submission attempt. He reversed 2 of the takedowns, but round 2 came around and Nathan kept getting it, got him down, submitted him within the first minute and 15 seconds. So, Nathan, welcome to the UFC. He improves to 9-1. Zygomantas falls to 9-3. I don't know if they're going to give him another opportunity. But Nathan Fletcher, featherweight division will have you. You know, you're young. You're 26 years old. Zygomantas is 27. He's from Lithuania. They might keep both of these guys. Nathan Fletcher is definitely going to say, But how about that? Three Ultimate Fighter fights from this past season. All of them have ended within the first two rounds. We love to see that. After this matchup, we head to the men's middleweight division as Andre Petrovsky took on Dylan Budka. And there was a reason Andre was a minus 280 favorite as he gets it done. 3 of 5 on takedowns, 9 minutes, 20 seconds control time, 23 significant strikes to 17. 78 total strikes to 23. Andre dominates. And don't get me wrong, Dylan Budka looked better on the feet. He only had 17 significant strikes. He looked better on the feet. He had no takedown defense. Absolutely no takedown defense. Round 1, 1 of 1 takedown attempts. Round 2, 1 of 2. Round 3, 1 of 2. It just didn't take much for Andre Petrovsky to take down Dylan Budka. And we already know that Andre Petrovsky is excellent at takedown. Excellent at grappling. Okay, so Andre getting it done. A little 2-fight win streak for him now. And by the way, 2 fights now in 2024 that he's won. Combined 22 minutes of control time, he's fought 30 minutes. That's absolutely crazy to me. He is now 7-2 in the UFC, 2-1 in 2024 so far. Good stuff for him. Dylan Budka falls to 7-4, 0-2 in the UFC. I doubt he's coming back. I really doubt they give Dylan Budka another chance. I would like to see Andre Petrovsky against another grappler of some kind. I mean, he's already fought Gerald Meerschaert. Gosh, I'm trying to think of someone who comes to mind. Who's fought recently? This is always fun. Look at guys who have fought recently. Who fought last week at middleweight? Ryan Loader, who won the Ultimate Fighter. You also have Zachary Reese. I think those are some good names he could potentially fight. I like both of those options for Andre Petrovsky. After that, we head to the women's strawweight division as Jacqueline Amorim, I correctly predicted she would get it done, minus 350 favorite, as we went to 2-1 on predictions, and she got a 3-minute and 28-second armbar of Vanessa Demopoulos. How about that? Jacqueline Amorim getting her 9th career finish, 7th career submission. How about that? Jacqueline Amorim now 3-1 in the UFC, 3-fight winning streak, all of them by finish. Back-to-back arm bars now in round 1 in 2024. Do I want to throw her immediately to the women's strawweight rankings? I just might want to. I mean, when you're just winning like that, especially in the women's divisions where it's easy to stand out, there you go. Vanessa, not the prettiest sight now. She's now 11-6. UFC run, Azerson at 5-3. Might bring her back. Nothing too impressive. She's kind of sneaked out with back-to-back close decisions where it could have gone either way. But Jacqueline Amorim, good work. Good work, Jacqueline. If I could pair you with someone in the women's strawweight division, I would say Karolina Kowalski. I think Karolina Kowalski would be a great matchup for you to test you with the rankings. And I mean, when you're doing this good, you know, 9 finishes now for Jacqueline Amorim in 9 career fights, 100% finish rate, there's going to be a little bit of excitement behind her. So Jacqueline Amorim, Karolina Kowalski, let's do that. As for Vanessa Demopoulos, the unranked women's strawweight pool, that's where she can find opponents. After that, featherweight division again as Gabriel Santos took on Yi San. We rode with the Japanese man, Yi San, or Chinese man, I'm sorry. And sadly, Gabriel Santos just brought the thunder, brought the fire, including round 1, 46 significant strikes in 23, and dropped him with a nasty front kick. Oh my goodness. The fact Yi San ate this and came back, and the next 2 rounds, I mean, even round 3, Gabriel Santos completely abandoned all the striking for round 1. 1 of 1 takedowns, 4 minutes control time. Yi San just would not go away, all right? And Gabriel would be hitting him with big punches, and Yi San would be slapping his chest, slapping him in his face, and going, come on, keep bringing it, keep bringing it. And you just had to hit him with a little round of applause, man. Round of applause. I mean, Yi San just, he had it. He had it, except he just didn't have, you know, all-around game plan here. Gabriel Santos getting it done, 76 significant strikes, 41, 110 total strikes to 96, 2 of 2 on takedowns, 6.5 minutes of control time. You know, 1-2 now in the UFC, snapping a little 2-fight losing streak. By the way, his losses, Leroy Murphy, David Onama, 2 absolute killers. Gabriel Santos, welcome to the featherweight division. Yi San, yeah, I don't know what to do with Yi San. I don't know what to do with him, and we tried to get a little risky here with the picks. He was a plus 190 underdog, didn't really do much, but I don't think we should disclude him. I think Yi San can come back. We can give him another attempt at featherweight. How about him versus Zygomantis from Moscow? You know, there's an option we could do. We're about to mention another guy in a second at featherweight who Gabriel Santos could potentially fight. Entertaining fight. Not fight of the night, but a fight where you watch it and you weren't disappointed. Next fight, I don't want to say I was disappointed here. You know, I think that's just an incorrect statement. Andre Lima takes on Felipe Dos Santos, but it was almost just like, didn't make sense. Felipe Dos Santos fights out of Shootbox de Lima, the same gym as Charles Oliveira, okay? And I would expect a higher level of grappling. And Felipe Dos Santos went 0 of 8 on takedowns, 0 of 6 round 1, and Andre Lima realized, okay, well, what am I doing? I can just take him down. Went 2 of 2 on takedowns, 9 minutes of control time. 9 minutes of control time. So there you have it. There you have it. Felipe wins round 1, 25 significant strikes to 10, and then loses the next two rounds, getting 4 minutes of control time on him in both of those rounds. Felipe, just abysmal. Just abysmal, and it's just apparent that takedowns are his weakness. He's a striker, okay? He's 1-2 in the UFC, be it those losses are not to Mel Cape and the young, hungry Andre Lima, who, 25 years old, now improves to 10-0, 3-0 in the UFC in 2024, pretty good. But I'd like to see a bit more from Felipe. I really would, and will they bring him back? I'm sure. But really, this was Andre Lima coming out, showing that he belongs, showing he can bring it. And hey, when you're undefeated, coming into the UFC, we love to see it. But grappling fest, pretty boring. Wasn't the most exciting. Just a win. Just a win for Andre, loss for Felipe. Flyweight division, there's unranked flyweights out there for him to fight. As far as ranked flyweights go, I don't really see either of these guys bouncing to the rankings just yet. Another featherweight matchup coming at you, the -2,500 favorite, Isaac Dalgarian. Gets it done. He gets his third career submission as he submits Brandon Marat with a round 2 arm triangle. The fight lasted 9 minutes and 19 seconds. 9 minutes and 12 seconds of control time for Isaac Dalgarian. That's right. 3 seconds into round 1, shoots a takedown. Utterly insane. 4 seconds of round 2, shoots a takedown, lands both of them, takes them down, controls them. 41 significant strikes of 3. 102 total strikes to 22, just destroys. There's a reason Brandon Marat was over a +1,000 underdog, okay? Dalgarian, 2-1 in the UFC, 7-1 professionally. Good win here. He now has, does he have 100% finish rate? I think he does, yeah, 100% finish rate for Isaac the Midwest to Choppa Dalgarian. Brandon Marat, 0-2 in the UFC, just brutal. Just brutal if you ask me. Brandon Marat now has 3 professional losses. All of them, he's been finished. So that's sad to see. Dalgarian, great win here. I don't really know who to match him up with. A lot of featherweights. Like I said, Kyle Nelson, we're going to mention him in a second. He lost. You can maybe have him fight Dalgarian versus Ultimate Fireman, Nathan Fletcher, Gabriel Santos, Esau. There's just so many unranked featherweights Isaac Dalgarian can match up with. He is still young, okay? The Dalgarian only 28 years old from Kansas. So, Dalgarian, great win, giving you your props. There you have it. With that, we got into our final prelim of the night, and Chris Padilla took on Rong Zhu, and I thought Chris was going to get submission, but guess what? Chris decided to bring the fists and elbows of fury and gets a round 2 TKO via doctor's stoppage. He literally popped Rong Zhu's eye out just about. I mean, a nasty elbow cut. Chris Padilla, welcome to the UFC. A +205 underdog, 28 years old, getting his 8th career knockout, 13th career finish, and 15 career wins. 2-0 now in the UFC in 2024. Amazing work, Chris. Amazing work. Lightweight division, we'll take you. We will so take you. Rong Zhu, this does snap a little 3-fight winning streak for him. And this is the first time he's ever been TKO'd in his career. 68 significant strikes to 14-9. It was competitive. It was back and forth. But Chris Padilla just had the better game plan. Got it done. The better power, I should better phrase that as. The man I'm about to mention in a second is who I think he should fight next. That is Yanal Ashmov, who beat Trevor Peak. Yanal Ashmov's landing 9 of 18 takedowns on Trevor Peak, 50%, 8.5 minutes of control time. You know, just another fight where Trevor Peak is entertaining. He's swinging, he's fighting, but he's just too wild. Trevor Peak is too wild for the UFC. He doesn't have good takedown defense. Sadly, lost here. You know, Ashmov's getting the win. 8-1 now professionally, 2-1 in the UFC. Trevor Peak going from 8-0 undefeated, now 1-3 in his last four. 0-2 now in the UFC in 2024. It's unfortunate to see. But yeah, and all Ashmov will match up perfectly with Chris Padilla, and I think Rong Zhu and Trevor Peak would also match up well. I like when you just got people in the same division who match up so well. You know, representing Israel, Chris Padilla representing the mean streets of California. And how about that, Chris? Now on a 7-8 win streak now for Chris Padilla. Happy to see it. But yeah, and all Ashmov's impressive win, did what he needed to do, and every Trevor Peak fight is entertaining. You know, some win fight of the night, some don't. It's just gotten to a point where I'm like, Trevor, come on. Got taken out 9 times. And just each one, it was just, oh my gosh, again, you got taken down. Ridiculous. With that, we got to our first ranked fight of the night, as currently, before these rankings change soon, the number 11th ranked Matt Schnell took on the number 15th ranked Cody Durden. And oddly enough, Cody Durden had just lost to the number 13th ranked Bruno Silva, TKO'd in round two. Taking this fight on 4 days' notice, Cody Durden had really nothing to lose, all to gain here, and he gained it all by getting a round two guillotine choke and a 50K performance of the night bonus. Cody Durden, 6 career submission, 12 career finish, and 17 career wins, snapping a little two-fight losing streak. Good win. Good win, Cody, and this should have won fight of the night. Round one, one of the most entertaining rounds of the entire year. Okay, this was so entertaining. And Matt Schnell, going out the only way Matt Schnell knows how, on his shield. He will end his UFC tenure on a 3-fight losing streak, finish 3 times in round two, and just a legend. Just a legend. Matt Schnell does retire after this, so Matt Schnell will probably be removed from the rankings. Cody Durden, I don't really know how they're going to do this, because Bruno Silva just beat him. So maybe you remove Matt Schnell, Tagir Limbekov goes up to 11, Bruno Silva to 12, Cody Durden to 13, Asuel Mbaev to 14, and you rank maybe Andre Lima? I don't really know, but good win for Cody Durden. This was at bantamweight, but essentially a flyweight matchup. Shame that Matt Schnell had to go, but I mean, just produced all of his fights in the UFC, pretty entertaining. He was either getting a good finish, I mean, that comeback against Sumer Darje 2 years ago, incredible, or he was getting crazily knocked out. I mean, look at Steve Ersic, got a title shot off of him. Cody Durden just did what we need to do. Entertaining stuff. I would like to see Cody Durden matched up with maybe Tim Elliott, Tagir Limbekov next. Actually, I think Cody Durden just lost to Tagir Limbekov, so we'll have to see. It's very interesting what you do here when you have a guy who beat someone ranked above two guys that I'll beat him. It's an interesting scenario. Great career, Matt. Cody, we'll see what's next for you. After that, our second performance of the night bonus, as Steve Garcia steps in on short notice. He was supposed to be going on a fishing trip. Instead, he steps in on short notice with all to gain, taking on Kyle Nelson, and TKOs him in round one. I can't believe I predicted it. It's happened before, and he actually did it again. Steve Garcia, 14 career KOs and 17 wins, now on a 5-fight winning streak. All of them finishes, 3 in round 1. If we remove his loss to Mahashat in June of 2022, he is 6-1 in the UFC with all knockouts. Incredible, incredible Steve Garcia. And he's just been getting better and better and better. 2-0 now in 2024. Both of them performance of the night, round 1 knockouts. Wow, in July and September. Love to see it, Steve. Kyle, tough loss. Actually, a little 3-fight win streak, 4-fight unbeaten streak. I wish you nothing but the best, Kyle. I truly, truly do. But I will say, up here now, 6 career losses. You've been finished in 5 of them. So not the prettiest. Not the prettiest, if you ask me. Steve Garcia, massive win here. It's hard to deny him a ranked opponent. And there's one name everyone's been mentioning. He's ranked number 15th, Edson Barboza. I think that is a perfect fight for Garcia. That'll be a striking matchup. It's a great test to see if he can hang with ranked opponents. Edson Barboza, Steve Garcia Jr., make that fight. Kyle Nelson, there's, you know, how much do you just do Calvin Kattar versus Kyle Nelson again? No shame in not doing that. It was already booked, fell apart, let's make it. Co-main event, okay. Co-main event came around. Yeah, the number 6th ranked Jessica Andrade taking on the number 8th ranked Natalia Silva in the women's flyweight division. And Natalia Silva, I freaking knew she could get it done. She makes her win streak now 12 fights. She's perfect in the UFC. as she wins by unanimous decision. Fight of the Night 2, winning every round over Jessica Andrade. And by the way, getting better every round. 33-24 significant strikes round 1. 37-11 significant strikes round 2. 47 significant strikes to 15 in round number 3. 117 significant strikes to 50. I mean, she just, besides being held on the fence for 2 minutes and 11 seconds throughout the whole fight, Natalia Silva was on her A game and just dominated Jessica Andrade. And we've seen with Jessica Andrade, you have to be good to get past her. All right? You have to be really good to get past her. Let's look at the people who got past her last year. Erin Blanchfield fought Man Fiorot for a title shot. Yan Cheonan got a title shot off that win. Tatiana Suarez going to get a title shot off that win. Beat Mackenzie Dern, beat Mara Rodriguez, and now she's beat Natalia Silva, who I was seeing MMA Theory post this on Instagram, great MMA page, go check him out, that the loser of Alexa Grasso and Valentina Shevchenko should take on Natalia Silva. I completely agree, whether it's Alexa Grasso, whether it's Valentina Shevchenko, that's a perfect matchup, because Man Fiorot has a title shot coming. Erin Blanchfield's taking on Rosa Muniz, and I don't really want to make her fight Macy Barber. That just feels unfair, if you ask me. So, Natalia Silva getting it done in impressive fashion, might I add. She'll be ranked number 6, maybe even number 5, come Tuesday. And as far as the women's pound-for-pound rankings goes, Jessica Andrade was ranked number 11th. I think you got to rank Natalia Silva on the women's pound-for-pound. Incredible stuff there. Officially 6-0. In the UFC, your first fight of the night. Good work. Very happy for her. We then got to the main event, guys. We'll wrap it all up right here. The main event, Sean Brady was taking on Gilbert Burns. Gilbert Burns was ranked number 6 in the world. Sean Brady was ranked 8th. And how about a shutout? A freaking shutout. Sean Brady, by decision, we called it. Holy cow. Just dominated. Just dominated Gilbert Burns. Anywhere this fight went, it was Sean Brady's world. And out of the 5 rounds, Gilbert Burns only had double-digit significant strikes in round 3. Other than that, held to 6 in round 1, 8 in round 2, 7 in round 4, and 9 in round 5. 130 significant strikes and 47 in favor of Sean Brady. Sean Brady, 7 of 17 on takedowns. Okay, 10.5 minutes control time. Got taken down once by Gilbert Burns in round 2. That was maybe the only round you could have given Gilbert Burns, or maybe round 3. I don't know. Every round went to Sean on the verdict scorecard. All the judges saw the same domination from Sean Brady. This was a passing of the torch almost, a changing of the guard. This is what Gilbert Burns did to Tyron Woodley. This is what Gilbert Burns did to Jorge Masvidal, Neil Magny, Damian Maya. You know, this is what Gilbert Burns does to people, and it was done to him. Sean Brady, 17-1 now, biggest win of his career. And hey, he's ranked number 6 now in the world. I'd rank him number 5. I'd put him past Colby Covington. And welterweight is at the craziest spot it's ever been. You have Michael Morales undefeated in the top 15. You have Joaquin Buckley, one of the biggest highlight reels. He's fighting a top 10 guy. Ian Michelle Gary undefeated in the top 7. Jack Del Maddalena, 17-2 on a 17-fight win streak, ranked number 4. Shafiq Rakhmonov, 18-0, undefeated, number 3 ranked, getting a title shot. It is a changing of the guard at welterweight, and sadly, Gilbert Burns has become the latest recipient of it. So, Sean Brady improves to a very good 7-1 in the UFC, 17-1 professionally. Only lost now to the champion, Bilal Muhammad. That aged well. Gilbert Burns, 3-fight losing streak now to Bilal Muhammad, Jack Del Maddalena, and Sean Brady. 22-8. There's rumors that he retired backstage. I don't know if it's true, but that was really it, Gilbert Burns. You had a good run. You had a good career. You had some great fights. I mean, he fought Kamaru Usman for the championship, the main events here and there. But man, Sean Brady, just a better fighter. Brady gets it done. And I was seeing people say you should fight Usman next. There's also Leon Edwards up there. You can even do Sean Brady versus, I don't even know, Jack Del Maddalena. There's a lot of options. If Gilbert Burns does come back, it's going to be against Michael Morales. It's going to be against, I don't even know, Joaquin Buckley. It's going to be against an up-and-comer. That might be it for him, but good night overall for us, 7-5, and whenever we predict the main event correctly, I always get in a better mood, especially when we start off on the main card 0-2, then we end 3-0, with 3 fighters I actually care about winning, I'm usually in a good mood. So, UFC Vegas 97, good Apex card, love to see it, but now we look ahead, guys, to this upcoming Saturday, UFC 306, Riyadh season, Noche UFC. It makes no sense to me why the Saudi Arabians are sponsoring the Mexican event, but John O'Malley defends his belt against Miram Dvovish Shelley. The trilogy between Alexa Grasso, Valentina Shevchenko, and Diego Lopez and Brian Ortega finally do battle. You also get some amazing Mexican fighters. Daniel Zaluber takes on Esteban Ribovics. The 16-2 Ronaldo Rodriguez looks to improve his win streak over Ode Osborne. Irene Aldana and Norma Dumont fight for a top five spot at women's bantamweight. Manuel Torres and Ignacio Mohamedez, two of the best unranked lightweights on the planet, they go to battle. Yasmin Yaragai, one of the most entertaining women's strawweights on the planet. Joshua Van Sepsen, short notice at flyweight. And Raul Rosas Jr., the 19-year-old fighter, will get us all kicked off. I'm excited for it. Going to be a good time. And make sure to tune in Friday, when it should be released. Thursday, we're recording for a special guest UFC preview episode. One of the first times ever that we've done this. But yeah, thank you so much for joining for me, guys. Let me know who you guys have in fantasy football, who your week two predictions are. We actually are doing an eliminator challenge. I picked the Cowboys as my eliminator. We are going on to week two, actually being still alive for one. So let me know who I should pick for that. Guys, as always, thank you so much for listening. And let me see if I should end with some music. I mean, I'm trying to start every episode with some music. So how does this sound as a little exit music? Which one should I do? PUBG, I think. Let's try us with this. And I will catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast. Huh? How about that? Guys, go conquer the week.